You know, imagine being promised safety, like real protection from something truly awful, torture even, and then boom, it's just yanked away based on secret promises.
Yeah, it's a really chilling scenario, and that's pretty much the heart of the case we're digging into today, Kozam v. Attorney General.
A really significant one. It really highlights this clash between, you know, needing to protect people from torture under international agreements and the government's power in immigration.
Exactly. And caught in the middle is Sami S. Kozam. He was an Egyptian Coptic Christian, fled Egypt fearing persecution, got here.
And immediately things got messy.
Yeah.
Egypt told the U.S. he was involved in a murder back home.
Right. So his visa gets revoked. He's detained right away upon arrival in 98. He applies for asylum, withholding of removal, and this CAT Protection Convention against Torture.
Okay, so CAT, that's the big one here. Because the U.S. signed on to that treaty, right? There's an obligation.
A legal obligation, yeah. Not to send someone back to a place where they're likely to be tortured. But here's the twist. Because of those murder allegations, he wasn't eligible for asylum or withholding of removal.
Ah, so those doors closed, but the CAT one.
That one stayed open, sort of. He was granted CAT deferral of removal. It's important to get the difference. Withholding is generally more permanent for a specific country. Deferral is more temporary.
Like, okay, it's too dangerous right now, but maybe later.
Exactly. It acknowledged the torture risk in Egypt at that time, but it wasn't a permanent shield. And he was detained for like 8 years under this deferral.
8 years in detention, wow. Then finally released in 2006 because it seemed like removal wasn't happening soon. But then 2007 rolls around.
And a rug gets pulled. DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, just terminates his CAT deferral.
Abruptly. And not because he did anything wrong here, right?
No, not at all. It was purely based on these diplomatic assurances they got from Egypt. Basically, Egypt promised they wouldn't torture him if he was sent back.
Okay, and this is where it gets really problematic from a fairness perspective. He wasn't shown these promises.
Nope. Kept totally in the dark. Didn't know what Egypt promised. Didn't get any chance to argue, hey, wait a minute, can we actually trust this? No hearing,
Yeah,
nothing.
gone. Based on a secret deal, that feels fundamentally wrong.
It really does. And that's what Kozam argued. He filed a habeas corpus petition saying this whole process, or lack thereof, violated his Fifth Amendment right to due process, you know, basic fairness.
The right to notice, a chance to be heard before the government takes away something vital, like protection from torture.
Precisely. And the first court, the district court, actually agreed with him.
They did. Okay, so they saw the problem.
Yeah, they vacated the termination, ordered his release,
Hmm.
said his due process rights were violated, but the government wasn't having it. They appealed.
So up it goes to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Now they have to wrestle with these big questions. Due process violation, what did they say?
A Third Circuit came down hard on the side of due process. They completely agreed with the district court. They hammered home that the Fifth Amendment absolutely requires notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard. Can't just skip that.
And how exactly did DHS's actions fail that test? What were the key points?
Well, first, the secrecy. Huge problem. How can you challenge something you know nothing about? You can't point out flaws in the assurances or bring up Egypt's track record if you don't even know what the assurances are.
Right, makes sense. What else?
Second, this idea that he could just, you know, send a letter
Yeah.
after the fact. The court basically laughed that off. They had this great quote, something like, we refuse to regard the general ability to correspond with an agency as sufficient to satisfy due process. A letter isn't a hearing.
Yeah, not even close. You can't cross-examine a letter. Was there a third thing?
Yes, and it's crucial. No impartial decision maker. DHS wanted to deport him, and they were the ones deciding if Egypt's promises were good enough. That's a clear conflict. The court said, such a complete lack of process is inherently prejudicial. Basically, the deck was stacked against him.
Okay, so the due process violation seems pretty clear-cut based on their reasoning, but the government also tried to throw up some roadblocks jurisdictionally, right? Something about the Real ID Act.
Yeah, they did. The Real ID Act back in 2005 changed how immigration appeals work. It mostly sent reviews of removal orders straight to the appellate courts and limited habeas corpus in district courts. So the government argued the district court shouldn't have even heard Kuzam's habeas case.
So was that the end of it? Did the Third Circuit say, sorry, wrong court?
Well, they agreed the district court technically lacked habeas jurisdiction over the final removal order itself because of Real ID. But, and this is clever legal footwork, they said the termination of the CAT deferral could be treated as its own final order of removal, reviewable directly by them, the appellate court.
Ah, okay. So they found a different door to let the case in. basically allowing them to review the substance of the due process claim anyway.
Exactly. It ensured there was some judicial path to review these termination decisions, which is really important. Otherwise, you could have these procedural violations happening with no court able to step in.
That makes sense. Now, what about the government's argument that courts shouldn't meddle in foreign policy, the whole rule of non-inquiry and political question thing?
Right. The government argued, hey, judging Egypt's promises is basically judging Egypt's justice system, and that's foreign policy. Leave it to us, the executive branch. They invoked the rule of non-inquiry, saying courts don't look into foreign legal systems, and the political question doctrine, saying some issues are just for the political branches.
Did the Third Circuit buy that? Did they back off?
Nope, not in this context. They drew a careful line. They said, look, we're not evaluating Egypt's entire judicial system. We're evaluating the process our own government used or failed to use when considering these specific assurances for this specific person.
So it's about our government's actions meeting our constitutional standards.
Precisely. They emphasize that ensuring due process under the Fifth Amendment is a core judicial function, even if foreign relations are involved. It doesn't become a hands-off political question just because another country made a promise. The court has a duty to ensure constitutional rights are protected.
So the court really stood its ground on the judiciary's role in protecting individual rights, even against executive branch arguments about foreign policy deference.
Absolutely. It really reaffirms that check and balance.
Okay, so let's distill this down. What are the big takeaways from COSAM? Why should law students listening really pay attention to this one?
Well, first, it's a massive reinforcement of due process rights for non-citizens, especially in these incredibly high-stakes DAT cases. You can't just use secret foreign promises to send someone back to potential torture without a fair fight.
Yeah, it puts real teeth into the idea that diplomatic assurances aren't just a rubber stamp. They need scrutiny.
Exactly. Transparency, the right to be heard, an impartial decision maker. These aren't optional extras when someone's life and safety are on the line. The case demands accountability.
And it feels like it strikes that balance. We talked about national sovereignty, immigration control, but also fundamental human rights.
I think that's right. It shows you can have immigration enforcement and respect due process. They aren't mutually exclusive. And importantly, COSAM sets a precedent for how courts look at executive actions when foreign policy and individual rights collide. It confirms the judiciary's vital role.
So wrapping up, COSAM really underscores that fundamental fairness, due process, it's non-negotiable, even in complex areas like immigration and national security.
Definitely. And for students, think about this. How does this case influence your understanding of administrative law? The limits on agency power, the rights of non-citizens. What about the separation of powers when foreign policy is involved? It raises big questions.
Like, how much weight should we give government assurances, especially when they come from countries with questionable human rights records? What does meaningful opportunity to be heard really look like in practice in these situations?
Those are exactly the kinds of questions COSAM forces us to grapple with. It's about ensuring our legal system protects liberty, even at the complex intersection of domestic law and international affairs. A really crucial case to understand.
Absolutely. Lots to think about there concerning government power, individual rights, and the court's role in it all.